this is the end of the year. This is the end of the Christian year. Next week, we start over. And Christ the King, you'll see it's Christ the King Sunday. It says right in there, if you look carefully, it's written sideways, but it's in there. Christ the King Sunday. It's the most recent addition to the Christian year. We've had Lent forever. We've had Advent forever, it seems. But Christ the King Sunday was added earlier in the last century, early part of the last century, in some ways in response to what was going on in Europe with fascism and communism. Both ideologies that said the state is supreme, the state is important. People only last for 70, 80 years, 90 years, but the state will live on forever. And you need to give your obedience and entrust your lives to the state. And the Catholic Church, responding to that, added this to our liturgical calendar to say, Jesus is Lord. His kingdom reigns. And so the readings are often about God's kingdom. This morning we're going to look at a conversation that Jesus and Pilate have. And it's usually read during Holy Week because it's just before Jesus is crucified. But what we're going to focus on in this reading is what Jesus says about his kingdom and the way Jesus handles this conversation that he has with a secular ruler, what most people would say is the most powerful man in Jerusalem, Pilate. So we want to look and see what is going on here. Jesus has just been arrested by the religious leaders. Judas has betrayed him. And in John's gospel, there's not a lot of detail about that trial that Jesus goes through with the Sanhedrin, the religious Jewish religious leaders. But in the other gospels, it's clear that Jesus is seen as a blasphemer, someone who seems to equate himself with God. And that is blasphemy and deserving of execution. So after the religious leaders convict him, they go to Pilate and wanting him to confirm that and to allow Jesus to be executed. And so they have brought their case before Pilate, the religious leaders, and now Pilate wants to interview Jesus privately to get both sides and to seek to find justice. So, in this story, Pilate brings Jesus into his area, away from the religious leaders, and has a private conversation. It reminds me of two other private conversations that Jesus has, one with Nicodemus, and the other with the Samaritan woman at the well. So when Pilate gets Jesus alone, he asks him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" This is the beginning of the interrogation. And Pilate gets right to the point. "Are you the King of the Jews? Are you someone in rebellion against Rome? Are you someone who wants to become the King of Jerusalem and Israel?" And Jesus doesn't know exactly what he means, because he hasn't heard the conversation that Pilate and the religious leaders have had. And so he doesn't know exactly what Pilate means by this. Pilate means, I think, pretty clearly, are you a political figure? Are you trying to put yourself into my politics? Are you trying to rule? But Jesus doesn't know that, so he asks for clarification. And Jesus answered, "Do you ask this on your own, or do others tell you about me?" And it might be taken by Pilate to say that Jesus is saying, "Does my reputation precede me?" And Pilate gets mad, and he's upset because he's in charge. He's the one who he believes holds Jesus' life in his hands, and he's used to asking the questions. And when Jesus asks a clarification or a question, he gets up, seems to get upset. And Pilate replied, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests have handed you over to me. What have you done?" Pilate says, "I don't care about your internecine squabbles. I don't care about what's going on among the Jews. I don't have any dog in that fight. I don't care about your theology or your religion. I just want to know, are you a king? I want to know why they brought you here. They see you as a threat. I want to know what's going on. You've gotten on the wrong side of the people in power, Jesus. You've gotten in trouble with the religious leaders. I want to know why. What's going on? Let's get an answer to this." And so Jesus responds. He doesn't answer the last question, "What have you done?" Instead, he goes back to the first question about king and kingship. Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not from this world. If my kingdom were from this world," now he explains why, how Pilate can know that he's not a political threat, why his kingdom is not of this world. He says, "If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here." So Jesus is saying, listen, if we were involved in politics, if we were going to overthrow the government, we'd have had a fight when you took me, when the religious leaders captured me. But we didn't fight. And when there was a struggle, I ended it and didn't allow the violence to continue. And so my kingdom is not of this world. And Pilate's confused because he doesn't really understand a kingdom that's not of this world. Kings rule, they reign, and they have territory. So if it's not of this world, what is it about? He's confused by this. And he says, "So you are a king?" Because it's not making sense to Pilate. And so Jesus explains, "You say that I am a king. For this I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." Jesus is saying, "I came to bring a kingdom, but it is not a political kingdom. It is not a territorial kingdom. I've come to reveal the truth. In me you will find truth. If you are drawn to me and follow me, you will find and know truth. And that is my kingdom. It is a spiritual kingdom. It is a kingdom that influences the world, but not through the politics of the world, not through the power of this world, the powers of this world." Jesus is saying, I'm a king. I rule and reign, but I'm also not a threat to you. I am the, in some ways he's saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Find me, find life. Allison mentioned that Jesus talks about in John's gospel of love. And Jesus, when he talks about love, he says, "If you love me, you will obey my words." And so the way to be a part of this kingdom is to love. And the way you love is you follow Jesus. You take seriously his words and live them out. And that rule, that reign begins in our hearts, in our lives. And then it infiltrates the rest of the world, influences and shapes the rest of the world. But I want you to also notice what Jesus is doing with Pilate. He's having a conversation with Pilate. He's reaching out a hand to Pilate. In the same way that when Nicodemus came at night so nobody would know he was hanging out with Jesus. He was ashamed or afraid of being recognized with Jesus, being a supporter of Jesus. But Jesus still has a conversation with him and is trying to reach out to him and draw him in. The same thing happens with the Samaritan woman. She's sort of put off by Jesus. You know, they're of a different religion and race. And she thinks they need to stay apart. And yet Jesus reaches out to her and tries to engage her. And he wins her trust. She believes in him. And his kingdom spreads to her. And as it spreads to her, she begins to go to others and share what she's learned about Jesus. And now Jesus is doing it again with Pilate, with a man who is about to execute him. And he still reaches out. He still cares for him. He still wants to have a conversation. And he offers him the truth. And Pilate, in his cynicism in verse 38, says, "What is truth?" And he cuts off the conversation. He ends the discussion. But it didn't have to be that way. I want you to notice what's going on. This is Christ the King Sunday. I want you to notice what is going on in this story. Pilate thinks he's in charge. The religious leaders bring Jesus to Pilate because they think Pilate is in charge. But he's not. What you see is Jesus is not shaking in his boots. Jesus doesn't seem to think that Pilate has his life in his hands. No. Jesus knows that this is his hour of glory. You remember when in the story of Jesus and Mary at the wedding in Canaan? And Cana of Galilee. And Jesus doesn't want to make a scene, doesn't want to give them more wine to do that miracle. And he says, "My hour has not yet come." But now it has. This is not a crucifixion that we're about to see. It is a glorification. Because Jesus says, "For this I came, to give my life. I came for this." In, I think it's 15, Jesus says, "When the Son of Man is lifted up, he'll bring all people to him." That's his hour. That's his moment of glory. It's not a resurrection. It's not a crucifixion. It's a glorification. This is what Jesus came for. Jesus says in, I think it's 12, "No greater love has anyone than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends." And now he's about to lay down his life. In other words, what is going on here is that Jesus is in charge. That God, in his wisdom, is orchestrating this to happen now at this place. Now, you and I, looking on, would say Pilate's in charge. The religious leaders acknowledge that by bringing him to Pilate. And Pilate's the one who's going to allow Jesus to be crucified. He gives the final say. It's all in his hands. But no, it isn't. Things are not as they seem. God is in control. Things are not as they seem. God is in control. Although when you and I would, if we were there at that time, would not think it. We'd have difficulty believing it. But it's true. God is in control, even here. Even in this awful event, the torture and death of Jesus. We, looking back, can say, yes, it was true, because Jesus was, if I can get the word out, Jesus was raised from the dead. So what I want to ask you is, do you believe that God was in charge then? I know you do. Do you believe he's in charge now? In your life, in my life. In the next month or two or three, one of us is going to, some of us are going to face a tragedy of some kind. We're going to get news that the cancer's back, or the diagnosis of something terrible, or someone we love, we're going to lose. Maybe a marriage that we thought was strong is going to reveal itself to be crumbling. Something's going to happen. I know it will, because it always does. That's going to rock our world, shake our faith. Will you trust that God is in control then? When things are not, when it appears that God is not in control, will you trust him then? Eugene Peterson, who just recently died, wrote many books, including The Message, that paraphrase of the whole Bible. He says, the gospel message says, you don't live in a mechanistic world ruled by necessity. You don't live in a random world ruled by chance. You live in a world ruled by the God of Exodus and Easter. He will do things in you that neither you nor your friends would have supposed possible. And sometimes he will do it through our suffering. Will you trust him? Things are not as they appear. God is in control still. In my life, when I've gone through difficult times, I've been angry at God or shocked by God because he allowed me to go through those things. And at the time, I felt like, where is he? What's going on? This is wrong. And only as I look back am I able to say, his hand was there. He was at work. I would say almost every time. Now, there are some things that are still going on that I don't know how they're going to turn out. And they are fears that I have. But as I've looked back in my life again and again, I've seen that it didn't look like God was in charge, like God was at work, but I was wrong. And God still is in control. Do you believe that? Will you trust that? Gary Berg says, the gospel is indeed a story of tragedy, but it is not Jesus' tragedy. It is a human tragedy as we witness the futile and tragic efforts of people blinded by darkness, unable to see the true King in their midst. My prayer for me and my prayer for you is that no matter what happens in the months ahead, you will see that God is King, that Jesus is Lord, and trust him then. Amen.